Hi, I'm Justin Boyd.
I'm Brittany Pacheco.
I'm Black Rufus.
Tristan Jones.
And we are the Watchers in the Basement.
Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. We are here today to talk about the fifth episode of the Amazon Prime Video series, Gen V. That episode is titled Welcome to the Monster Club. And let's get right to it. Start with Tristan. Tristan, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Ooh, I think Gen V made a little leap. In episode five. Yeah. I think they hit leap. I felt this was the first episode, even like a lot of stuff has happened in the first four episodes, but like, this is the first one where the anxiety of like, okay, I'm really not sure what's going to happen or where this is going to lead to. I have no idea how this is going to go. Like, you start kind of feeling a lot of that attachment to characters. And, you know, this is kind of like the part of a good season where, like, the relationship building at the beginning starts to pay off, because now you're so invested in, like, every part of these characters' lives that, you know, they stop being expendable to right. you in a certain section. But, like, I love where the plot is going. I love how like they're starting to shuffle the deck, so like we understand exactly who the enemy is, and like we're starting to get a little bit more clarification on what the larger conflict is going on in the season. I loved episode five. Like I said, I think they're starting to hit a different level as far as, you know, the plot, the writing, the attachment that we have to the characters and their stories. So like I'm all in, loving it.
Frank, what'd you think about it?
I loved it. I think a lot of times with spinoff shows, you can lose pizzazz and momentum from like the main version of wherever it stemmed from. And like, I like how it has elements of like The Boys, but it's creating its own identity with these characters. Like they're not relying on like what happened and with season three of The Boys and like all that. These are fresh new characters, fresh new perspectives. And I love the story, and like, and it's creating a aura of like showing a deeper dive of the problem. It's not a suit problem, it's a human problem. And like, I love how they're showing that, and that, you know, it's that old adage, man, like absolute power corrupts absolutely. And when you give, when entities have so much latitude to do what they want, oftentimes it goes awry, and other people are, you know, they are the fall guy or the fall woman for it. They fall victim. And I know we're gonna jump into the episode a little bit more. It went in depth, but you know, I felt so bad for Kate. Like I wasn't frustrated with her. It's just more so of this big powerful vault machine. And what they just constantly just spit out. They use these kids, they use these humans or these soups, these parents of these soups, and they create this cynic advantage of like just for the all powerful dollar. And I love how we get into the weeds of the story in episode five. I just wish we had more episodes. It's kind of frustrating that you get three episodes in one, and now it'll be done in a few weeks. But this is a great story, and I can't wait to dive into this.
Yeah, definitely. Brittany, what are your thoughts?
I mean, the shock and awe value is always there in these episodes. I mean, just from the get-go from this episode, and like Frank said, we'll dive more into it in a little bit. But with this story, you kind of think maybe you have an idea of the direction it's going, and then it's like plot twist, right? You think you know who your friends are, and while that friend's intentions may be, you know, more noble than what it's coming off as, it still sucks, obviously, right? I mean, the fact that this episode dealt with a lot of memory loss and a lot of like, we're rewriting history as much as we can to deviate from the real story here. And it's at the hands of, like I said, one of your friends. It's really, really sad. Literally, pun intended, it's at the hands of one of your friends, y'all. So it's just, it's really interesting to see. And I kind of echo what Frank is saying about Kate. I felt bad. However, I have a lot of questions, of course, when it comes down to Kate, her involvement, and then some other questions that I've asked in prior pods. But I hope that with this episode and having y'all here, we can kind of like not maybe dissect fully, but maybe we can all get on the same page about it.
Yeah, the Kate thing was a really strange turn. I did not see that coming. And we left off in episode 4 where the characters are experiencing they're losing time, you know, specifically Marie and Jordan. Then we start off this episode and everyone is lost track of time after what happened in episode 4 at Dr. Cardoza, I believe his name, at his house. Then they're at this like wild college party and no one can remember like the last 3 or 4 days of their lives. So we're led to believe it's Rufus. Like he's the one who's behind all this. Last week we talked about it. I didn't think he was like a big enough character to be the big bad for this, so to speak. So I was proven right. It's halfway. I figured that, you know, obviously Dean Shetty would be behind it, but I did not see the heel turn by Kate. Tristan, what are your thoughts on that? I thought that was very shocking. And then also, why do you think Kate is doing what she's doing?
I didn't expect it to be Kate because I wasn't sure she had the power to do that. Like, I know she has the power to like manipulate people to do certain things. I didn't know she had like memory. She had the power to like make someone's memory lapse. I honestly didn't even think about it. I thought it was Rufus. And I also kind of figured that he was maybe working with somebody else, because what other reason would he have to like, just kind of like blank everybody's memory like that? But I echo what Frank said, like, even finding out it was Kate, there wasn't like a sense of like, oh, fuck Kate. You know what I'm saying? It was like, for me, it was like immediate empathy, because once we figured out it was Kate, like, I guess the natural, you know, next step is like, okay, who's controlling Kate? Right? And like I said, like,
are you muted? It's okay. Stuff happens.
Gotta love technology.
He was on a roll, bro.
Huh? Kate wiped your memory.
She wiped your mic. Yeah.
So y'all didn't hear any of that?
No, we heard like we missed like the last maybe last half sentence and a half or so.
No, I got a message across my screen saying like the connection was weak. Oh. And I guess it automatically muted me.
That's what happened. Yeah.
My hands are right here. but no, I'm just saying like somebody has to be controlling Kate. Like so.
Right.
And that gives us an opportunity to again dive into like why, what is the investment in, you know, we obviously know that they don't want people to know that Sam escaped. So like, right. If they're going these great lengths to wipe the memory of like some of their brightest, you know, minds, the kids that they have so much invested in and they're grooming to be like these big stars and everything to like be so powerful, why the investment in, on the flip side, wiping their memory and trying to control this particular situation. So obviously this is going to be something way bigger. So like, there's no sense in being mad at Kate because this is way bigger than Nino Brown. This is way bigger than Kate. Like, so like, I can't wait to find out like where this all leads to. Does this go into like, is this just a school thing? Is this, you know, does it go into like Bart International? But finding out that Kate was the one behind this was, one, a great plot twist, number one. Yeah. You start to kind of think back to, like, the different ways that she was able to play, you know, her friends. But, like, it was so heartbreaking when she was, you know, before she could get to Andre, when they were on the couch. Like, she's literally in tears. Like, I don't know if y'all saw that. Like, the camera perfectly shows Andre leaning forward, but it also shows like her in the background with tears, and like you can tell like she does not want to do this. She does not want to be involved in this in any type of way, and this pain has been building up because she had to fucking, I don't know what to call it, but like Men in Black loop, you know. So she's been doing this for a while, and you know, it's easy to be empathetic towards it because you can tell this is something that's been killing her, like literally from within, for so long.
Yeah, you know, you talk about like her performance. Like, I mentioned this in the first episode or our first pod. We talked about the first 3 episodes. I wasn't familiar with really any of these actors for the most part, and they're awesome. I mean, everybody in this show is like nailing it. Like, these are really talented people. The characters are played really well, and you know, Tristan, you posed a lot of great questions. And one question I have about Kate with her powers, how long does her mind wipe last? I'll throw that to Frank. What do you think about that? Because we learned in this episode that she mind wiped Luke to make him forget about Sam. But obviously Luke knew about Sam in episode one. And I think he knew about him even before what happened at the end of episode one. So I wonder, like, does it wear off after a week? Is it a month? Like, do you think we're ever going to get that answer? And like, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think we get the answer as far as how long. I know it wears off because Luke had nightmares and like, not visions, but like, he had like visions and dream, well, dreams and like nightmares about his saving his brother. So we know in somewhere in his subconscious, in the back of his mind, he was still thinking about Sam in some sort of way, and like, and a part of his conscience reached out to him to like save his brother. So, you know, and my question is too, like, what is the irreparable damage it does to one's brain when you keep going through that and going through that and going through that? Like, Luke, like when episode one comes on, Luke seems totally sane. He's like, he's everybody's like number one soup. He's going to the seven.
He's golden boy, guy. Literally.
Yeah, like he's living the golden child of the college, and like he committed suicide. So I wonder how much of that had to do with, you know, Kate wiping his mind over and over again to where, you know, he probably has, you know, schizophrenia or, you know, some type of PTSD. I think there's something that speaks to that, of like how it affects you over time being wiped over and wiped over again. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. Like Tristan said, I didn't know her powers can go to great lengths. I know she can like make people like do what she wants, but I didn't know she can make people forget. That was something that I didn't know.
Yeah. I mean, her powers are like the powers of suggestion, but I guess if she tells you to forget everything, I guess you'd forget everything. You know, I guess it just depends on what she says.
Yeah.
Brittany, go ahead.
I want to piggyback on that and just two things, specifically about Golden Boy and the visions that he was seeing in the first episodes that we saw with him, because I posed the question of, if he saw Sam at Sage Grove as we know Sam now, right? But it took place 3 years prior to the timeline of this, the series. Why was Luke seeing Sam presumably as a little boy? So it would kind of make sense now as to Kate having wiped his memory over and over and over again, remembering Sam as how we know Sam. Maybe because of the history of schizophrenia that supposedly existed within the family, that the visions that Luke was seeing were memories or how he last remembered, quote unquote, Sam and as a little boy. So to me, that kind of would maybe explain that, because that was a big question I had. But the other thing too, I wonder about Kate's powers is, aside from if the memory lapse lasts, how close does she need to be in order to make you forget? Because it just seems like she always has to touch you, right? She has to take off the gloves. She has to put her hands on you, wherever it may be. And then the power of suggestion is you forget whatever happened, because it happened with Andre. When Andre went to go find Rufus after learning what, you know, Kate's claimed had happened to her by Rufus, he wiped her memory and had a camera on her. She woke up in a bed, you know, so you get the idea of what's happening. But Rufus heard, Andre heard that, goes and finds Rufus in the dorm, seals it shut, and he has Rufus by the neck. And then next thing you know, swipe, Andre has his hand out picking up a bag of fast food. So it's like, at what point did Kate get to him? Or does Rufus have the power, you know, as long as he's within close proximity? Because he did eventually say that to Marie and Jordan.
I think that was Rufus that did that, though, the fast food part. Because he was touching Rufus, and like, Rufus was in close proximity with him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was Rufus. I don't think that was Kate.
Okay, because to me, I was just like, but she wasn't even there. So it's like, how did that even happen? But now, as I'm talking about it with y'all, it would make more sense and supports Rufus saying to Marie and Jordan towards the end, hey, I've been in this place for the last 5 hours. In order for my powers to work, I have to be close to somebody, and I haven't been close to any of y'all. So that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I think we're kind of led to believe that Kate took off her glove and just like touched all of her friends and told them something real quick during this party. And that's why they lose their memory for, I mean, even at the end, they don't have it totally back. They learn the truth, but that's what I wonder. Like, when are they going to get it all back? Because obviously they don't forget everything. Like, you know, Emma knew where her dorm room was, and she goes back, and, you know, whenever they first encounter Sam in this episode, you know, obviously Sam, his mind wasn't wiped. And so he remembers meeting Emma and Marie, but they don't remember him at all. But then he references the drive-in or whatever. And then Emma goes back and she has a shirt, you know, on her bed. And so she remembers, okay, that's like this guy, this Sam guy, like, you know, what he said is true. So then she starts to kind of put it together.
That and Marie has an inkling feeling as to why she doesn't trust Dean Shetty, why she and Jordan don't approach Rufus while he's talking to Dean Shetty. She's like, I don't trust her. I don't know why, but I know I'm right about this.
But I hope they do a flashback of like that night at Dr. Cardoza's house where Sam is about to kill him. Cause like they're fighting, they're all over the house. They're fighting all over the place. Like all five of those people are not in close proximity. So how was she able to like touch everybody through all that chaos with that fight with them and Sam? It just seemed like it was so much going on that was so separated all over the house. I don't know how she was able to throughout all that conflict, all that drama to be able to touch everybody at the same time to have them wipe for days at a time.
Does she have to touch them all at the same time? Like couldn't she go up to Andre and say, hey, I need forget everything that you know about Sam.
Right.
And that can kind of just take care of that. And then you don't really, it doesn't have to be like this big reaction.
Yeah. It's just no,
like
it's he just goes about his touch life. Each one. There you touch go. Yeah.
Exactly. And go to Emma and say, hey, forget everything you know. Like, and it just, it kind of takes care of itself.
But it also, sorry, Tristan. I was just going to say, but it would also explain as to why so many days have been lost, because every time that Kate uses her powers, it has that physical effect on her with her eyes and, you know, bleeding out. So it would take, I think, some time for her to recover, you know, because she pushes too much. Right.
Right. I think one of the most interesting things about this show is that we're finding out about these characters' powers, and they're also finding out more about their powers. Like Marie, every episode, it seems like she's finding more about what she can do. We're finding out more about Kate's powers, obviously, Andre's powers, like hell, Emma is, you know, we're finding more, like there's more layers to her getting big and getting small and everything that comes into that. So like, we're seeing like literally a development. Like this is a big thing from the boys, and that for the most part, all those characters are pretty much set in what they can do. And we know that, and they know that. And like in real time, we're kind of like seeing the development of these superheroes or superhero characters. Pretty interesting.
No, it is. That's a great point. The development part of it. Yeah. Cause I mean, obviously they're in college. That's where you go to learn and further your development. So it works out. This show is just really, really well done. It is like, and Frank, I want to pose this to you. We've been watching The Boys now for 3 or 4 years. We're big fans of it. And I remember like with season 3, I thought, wow, this is like, it's amazing how they're taking like Marvel kind of stuff, like MCU stuff, and they're mixing in like DC Justice League stuff. Well, with this show, it's kind of meant to be kind of an X-Men, like a young mutant, you know, young soup show. Are they doing X-Men better than X-Men? I know you're a big fan of the X-Men. I just want to pose that question to you.
They are, but I think with this show, they have a larger latitude to be as dark and as rated R as possible. Where in X-Men, you have to keep it kind of PG adjacent. You really can't go the max that they're going. And I think that, and I mean, the writers are better too, but I think this it's an unrated show. Like you can do whatever you want, and literally you can push envelope there and back, and it's not going to be any pushback because of the audience that you're appeasing to. So I think that gives them the leg up on that as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, Disney and DC, they have to like cater to 5-year-olds and 55-year-olds. Whereas this show can just be, you know, right for that, that demo, that 18 to 49 or 18 to 44, or whatever that demo is that buys stuff in this country. Brittany, what do you think about the development aspect of these characters as far as like they're in college and they're gaining these powers and they don't know what they can do? And just kind of that whole, like they're experimenting with stuff. You have a, you have this, which conveniently you have Jordan and Marie having this kind of awkward, I mean, they're into each other, but then they don't want to admit to it. But then now you have this plot device where they can just kind of wave it off and say, well, you know, our minds were wiped or we have amnesia or whatever. How do you, like, how do you think the show dealt with that storyline? And what do you see with that going forward?
I think they're hitting pretty much every nail on the head when it comes down to having a younger demographic that are in college, right? College is a time to experiment, interpret that as you will. you're finding out about yourself. You're finding new people to hang out with and people to do other things with. And it, I mean, for them, you have that extra layer because they are superheroes, if you will, and they're trying to figure out just how much or how little can be done and somehow incorporating that into their major, right? And it's really fascinating, but it really makes my college experience like super dull, you know, like just way dull. I actually love the idea of Marie and Jordan kind of, you know, being into each other, but like what you mentioned, the plot device of, okay, well, our memories are wiped, so we're cool. We're cool. And it's like, that was a little hurt. Like it hurt because that's not something that I think any young person really wants to hear, especially if you kind of have feelings with someone, especially presumably with someone that you may have lost your virginity to. So it kind of cuts you a little bit, kind of cuts you in a different way. But with that being said, I don't know why, but I feel it kind of works when you have these two individuals who were kind of at odds with one another, and the fact that they're in the world of soups, who they are, what they look like is not going to be well accepted by a large audience, you know, in certain areas of the country. So it's just kind of like, it just seems apropos that they would kind of, you know, hook up and be together, that kind of thing. So I'm very fascinated to see where Marie and Jordan's relationship will go. It's curious how we do see Jordan switch genders, just in social aspects, but then also like while Jordan's fighting. Right? Because when they're fighting Rufus at the end, it's first female Jordan and then one big blast and then it's male Jordan. So it's just, it's really interesting. Like, is this subconscious? Is this something that like maybe one outpowers the other? You know what I'm saying? It's really curious to find out more about Jordan and their abilities as well as Marie, right? She is able to figure out when Emma's period is, the clotting that was in her neck for her to discover there's a tracker in her neck, right? Like that's pretty cool. That's pretty useful, right? Yeah. And Andre being able to showcase some of his skills. I mean, he, no questions asked, he was ready to kill Rufus in the end, right? I mean, like barrel, was it a beer barrel that just like hauled at Rufus? Like, damn. That's wild.
he might be more powerful than Magneto, because it looks like he can move matter of all kinds, because I don't think because he moved things besides metal. Mm-mm. It was all metal.
And I say that because his father is polarity, and that deals more with like metal and steel type elements. So I would think that Andre exhibits similar powers as to his father.
What was the thing that he turned into, like that cut that girl in episode 1? Was that metal? Was that a coin?
Not sure. I don't know if it was like a paperclip that he manipulated to turn into a little bird or something, but it definitely was something metallic.
Oh, okay. The pop culture references in the show was like, dude, I was the Chappelle reference, man, made me so happy, bro. When Emma said, Why are you scratching like, why are you motherfuckers scratching like Tyrone Biggums? I hollered when I heard that shit. I was like, yes.
I figured as much. Oh my God.
I was like, yes.
I figured as much. I love Emma. I think she's a great, great character. I mean, like,
would they get that reference in real life? Like,
they probably wouldn't.
You're young as fuck for that.
Yeah,
but these kids these days, like, they view the stuff that we watched, you know, 20 something years ago as retro, and it's old school, and that's cool. So I don't know.
Yeah, some of my students are still watching like Grey's Anatomy, like from the beginning. So.
Never watched
that show's still going, like it's still happening, right? Good, so like God. In,
yeah,
like season 22 or something.
32. I don't know.
She's like MASH.
Oh my God. You know. Days of Our Lives, General Hospital. Anyway.
Those are soap operas.
I know, but they're long running shows.
Yeah. You mentioned about the tracking device. And I like how this show, you know, there's callbacks to The Boys, obviously, and there's things like I like how there's so much that happens in The Boys that I forget about the tracking device stuff. Like that happened to Starlight in season 2, I believe, where Huey and
Mother's Milk.
Yeah. They had to like,
and Frenchie.
They had to get it out of her. Like I completely forgot about that part of it.
Diamond saw that shit because her skin's bulletproof.
Mm-hmm. It's also like, how do they get those devices in those people? You know, like what, when does
I
that
mean
happen? Does it have to happen when they're little, or
did Kate like wipe their memory and like it happened? And I don't know. I don't know at what point that's implanted into them.
It would have to be either when they get the Gen V, or it would have to be.
You mean Compound V?
Only the other.
Gen V is the show.
Yeah, Compound V.
Compound V is the chemical.
Either then, you know, at a young age, once they are, you know, injected with the Compound V, or it has to be at some point when they're at the school, because in between, like, what is this, like, what's the point of tracking them? You know, maybe you track it to kind of see if what they're doing with these powers, or just kind of keeping tabs in case you want to kind of, you know, call them up from AA or some shit like that. But like, it would have to be then, either when they were kids or when they entered into the school.
Well, that's actually. But
I don't think all the kids went to the school, though. I don't think all the people who took Compound V went to that college. I think Starlight actually got on the 7 just from a demo tape. I don't think she ever went to that school.
Right. Maybe. But I understand what Tristan's saying is, you know, when the babies are injected with Compound V, they're probably also injected with the tracker at the same time, right?
Yeah.
So kind of like, you know, when I went to go get my COVID vaccine the very first time, it's like, yes, I would like the super soldier serum, you know, if you want to throw in a tracker there too, that's fine. But that kind of would support maybe, in a way, whatever the doctor at Godalkin is doing, you know, Cordova, because he has a conversation with Shetty about what happened at his home. And he's like, I'm done with Sam. Like, he's dangerous. I'm through with it. You know, find someone else. And Dean Shetty's like, listen, like, you're not going to go anywhere. This is where you need to be. And he says, look, give me Marie. You know, she doesn't know what her powers or how powerful she is. She's like the rarest of soups, basically, that he's ever seen. It would help speed up his timeline to control. Did he say the virus or to control the kids?
He's working on a virus that's meant to control the, you know, the soups, basically, which.
Right.
That's really interesting.
It really is. And it's just like, oh, okay, are we just doing it at the kid, like the college level to, you know, guinea pig them? Like, obviously that's what Sam has been there for the longest. But then Dean Shetty says something very interesting that, you know, you're not the only other person who's interested in Marie. She has a benefactor. It's like, who is this benefactor?
Yeah. That's the question I was going to ask y'all. Does anybody have any ideas who it might be? Tristan, you got any thoughts?
I got nothing. I'm thinking
same boat.
I don't even have like a concept of who it could be.
I think is the future vice president.
Oh, that's a good call.
I think that's who that is.
Victoria Newman.
I think that's who it is.
I bet that's who it is because I think she's supposed to appear in this season briefly. We haven't seen her yet, have we?
Not yet.
No,
but
not yet.
I think you nailed it. I think it's her.
Good job, Frank.
I mean, Victoria blows up people's heads. Marie blows up people's dicks. Makes sense. Perfect. Hit them on both ends.
Yeah.
No, it was really curious for Dean Shetty to say that Marie has a benefactor. I mean, she did get in on a full ride scholarship from what we understand. Like, good for her. You go, girl. But it is very interesting. And I'm just wondering, when are we going to meet that benefactor?
And how do they intend? It might be next episode.
Did y'all happen to watch the trailer for the next episode? Oh my God.
I watched it last week, but I rewatched it today, but I did watch the trailer. So I can't remember what exactly happened in the trailer.
Let's get to it then. Brittany, you've already teased it. So next week, surprise, surprise, Soldier Boy is back. Now, my question is it current day Soldier Boy? Is it a recording? Is it like, are they traveling back in time? Is it just like a video appearance? Brittany, what do you think?
I want to say present time. I don't know how, because I think when we last saw Soldier Boy in season 3 of The Boys, he was going back to sleep, you know, or he was going to be re-iced.
Right.
So I'm not sure. I'd be curious if, let's say, here's another thought. Sam has visions, right, that occasionally deal with people who are not there, puppets. We have to talk about that scene from this episode. But he has mentioned, or in his little cell under Godolkin, he's got all like these comics. I think a lot of them deal with Soldier Boy. I think he has a poster of Soldier Boy in that cell. I wonder if he will be visited by Soldier Boy in a vision.
Oh, good call. That's a
really, I don't know. They both like to commit a lot of violence. So
I think we might see the Soldier Boy puppet also. That could be.
I'm here for it. I'm here for it. What do y'all think? At what capacity do you think we'll see a Soldier Boy?
I just hope they're not stupid enough to like wake him up again. Like he destroyed half of Manhattan, like on accident. Like why would you wake him up? Like I think it's gonna be in like a either recording capacity or like maybe like a flashback capacity of like him coming to the school or something. I don't see how, what reason you would like wake him up after what he almost did the vault in the season finale episode 10 in season 3.
I have nothing. I don't know what capacity we'll see him in.
It's very rare when you are a man of few words on certain topics.
Nothing, shit. I mean, the K thing, they clearly, Gen V has the capacity and ability to like completely subvert expectations and stuff. So like benefactor, the Soldier Boy part, that's what makes me so excited. Like I don't fucking know. I don't know. I you can ask me 100 times. I'm like I have nothing. No, nothing on it. So, the one thing that I've, you know, kind of have had like an inkling on is that Dean Shetty, like obviously is crooked in some type of way, but like there's so many signs there. There's no signs of anything. It's like, oh, this is a job for Soldier Boy. So I don't know. We'll find out.
And I wonder, I wonder if they're headed toward, is Dean Shetty, is she related to Victoria Newman? Is that something? Because
somebody mentioned that about the daughter part, right?
Right. Yeah.
That she had a daughter.
But then Victoria Newman had a brother also. So I guess that maybe that would.
She did.
Yeah,
I think you're getting confused with Kate. Kate had a brother, and when she first learned about her power, she had sent her brother away.
Well, who did Victoria like kill like in the alleyway? It was like, wasn't it a brother or was it?
I think that was like someone from Red River, like a foster.
Oh, okay.
Just
okay.
Someone.
Yeah, it wasn't a brother. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So, going back to Dean Shetty with her kind of, I guess, in a way, trying to groom these students to do her bidding, it's like, what kind of dirt does she have on Kate outside of what we've already learned about Kate, as I mentioned, about her sending away her brother when they were young, and that was the first time she used her powers. So it's kind of like we saw this character, Dusty, who appears to look like a child, but is really like 28 years old. I mean, is Kate kind of the same thing? Is she like this older person who's in a very young woman's body and is trying to be someone that she isn't? You know what I'm saying? Like there's so many questions at this point.
Yeah. I mean, as far as like no questions, there's no doubt about it. No one in the puppet scene survived except for Sam. So let's get to that. Sam, when he has these psychotic breaks, he has these visions and he sees puppets. He sees these Avenue V, which is their Sesame Street in that world, puppets. And this Vought Special Forces team is sent after him. And Sam, in puppet form, rips these puppets apart. Frank, what'd you think about the puppet violence?
If I worked for the college and I was a father of two, like this, like the one man said before he got sliced open in half, and they told me I have to go pick up this homicidal maniac soup, I'm not going. I'm putting my resignation papers that day. Like, you know how powerful this dude is. Like, and this is what's so funny to me, like why Vought is so powerful. Like, you sending humans to go catch a soup who's virtually invulnerable to anything. And like, and I love the puppet depiction, because like, for one, it was going to be just way too bloody to show. Actually, I mean, they've done it before, but like, I think it did a great job of showing like in puppet form of like how easy it is for him to go through these people like paper mache. Like, it wasn't even a challenge. Like, he's going through a manic schizo episode, and he's doing it with ease. And it was like, I laughed. I'm sorry. I laughed my ass off when he was cutting through those people like hot butter with a knife. It was so funny to me. But I thought it was so creative how to make it in that form, like how easy it is for him to, and how powerful he is. Like, he's like, he might have homeland type power. Like, I don't like it, it's he looks serious, you know what I'm saying? And like, the last dude that said, you know, oh, I'm a father, I'm single, I'm a father of two kids. You want to think about that when you took this job, when you took this mission? So I loved it. I loved it. This whole boys universe, they love showing stuff in such a colorful, whether it's through cartoons or through puppets or through some type of animation. It's a very creative way of like really showcasing how deranged and powerful these people are.
And also, like, the violence is so cartoonish. Like, that's kind of the point of the universe, that everything, like their powers, like just the sheer artistic way that they could, like you said, cut through humans and hell, other soups, is like, it's so cartoonish that sometimes the best way to illustrate that is through cartoons, right? Or through puppets or whatever. Like, I'm glad we didn't see that in human form, because good Lord, like, even after the aftermath, you see the guy hanging from from the rope. Yeah. Like, that is wild, man. Like, I think I asked last week or one of these weeks, like, how much money do you have to be paid to take that job? Like, your chances of not dying in a gruesome way are very slim, if we're being honest. And like, you know, Dean Shetty said, like, it doesn't really look great on your resume that you were out here working with soups. So like, how down bad do you have to be? Like, if I was bought, I would strictly hire from like Death Row.
Like, yeah.
You wanna,
like, you wanna Suicide Squad. Squad. Like,
yeah. Cause think about it.
Chance at rehabilitation right here.
Cause think about it. If you're applying for this job and you ask, so like, why's vacant open? Oh, like the first 40 soldiers got killed last week. with Emmett that broke out. Are you taking that job? Like, I don't understand like how they keep hiring human beings to supervise soups. Like, make that make sense. I don't get that.
They just don't tell them. You know, they're like, yeah, we're hiring. We aggressive expansion. We're just like, we're growing at a rapid pace. We need 1,000 new security guards every week.
So. I mean, the very fact that Dean Shetty couldn't identify the difference between Greg and Bob. I mean, that's something I think that pretty much hits home for everyone here in our respected jobs.
You don't might as well give him a number.
Hey, there you go.
X1Z.
I mean, like, take an approach from Loki, like Hunter, you know, B-15 or X-5 or whatever. Like, just do that. But with the puppet scene, it's just so comical. I love the glitter confetti that is supposed to like represent like the burst or splash of blood on it, and it just keeps going. It was just like, this is so pretty. It's not though. Mm-hmm. But how?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All I was gonna say is just for how Sam is perceiving this event in his mind, or at least that's how we're viewing it, right? Because it's so bloody gruesome. But that's the world of the boys, obviously, and. I'm curious as to why it's the puppet form that Sam associates bad things with, it seems, right? Because it was TV's Jason Ritter and the Deep in puppet form that came to him first and said, hey, they're going to hurt you and they're going to hurt Emma. So you know what you need to do. You need to kill all these people. So... And that's what happened. He saw Emma in puppet form and he's like, no, I'm going to save the real Emma, not you, enter other puppets. It was interesting, to say the least. Yeah. What were you going to say, Frank?
No, I was going to say, after he mutilates that whole army of men trying to chase him, he's walking through the woods or whatever. And like, you hear a helicopter hovering. Like, if you're the guy in the helicopter and you see there was a scene where there's a guy hanging by a rope out of a tree, or maybe from the helicopter. If you see,
I think it's from the helicopter.
Oh, so okay. So was the helicopter vacant at that point? Because if you're in the helicopter, you see all your homies getting thrashed, and nobody's coming out of that motherfucker. Why are you still hover around that location? You should be leaving.
Shock. I have no idea.
I think so. The puppets, they jump down from like the top of the tunnel where he's at. So I'm assuming that they kind of latched on there and then hop down.
So the helicopter is serving more as a light for them to see the tunnel and such. Okay, yeah. So they may not even be aware.
Yeah, they were like a strike team. You know, they're like...
But they never came back.
No. part of that guy did, but yeah.
If you're walking, you're like, hey, copy. What is your location? What's going on? And nobody's answering? Like, if the 20 guys that crashed the party are not answering, something tells you they didn't make it alive.
Yeah, that was just wild. I'm really curious to find out more about Sam, his abilities, why he's been experimented on. Is this something that the parents have consented to? You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a really interesting development when it comes down to Sam. And then for him to kind of ironically be so chill when he sees Emma again at the end of the party. And he's all like, oh my God, like, I'm so happy to see you. I was so happy to smell your puke and know you're okay. And I'm just like, ew, first of all, ew. But, you know, he's just so like chill. Emma brings out a side of him that I don't think he's felt in quite some time. And when they reunite again at the drive-in and he reveals the truth about like Kate and how, what's going on at Godolkin, It's just really nice to see that he's chill around her. You know, he's not going to hurt her.
I love how, so this is all set up from like when she snuck into his room in the first place, and she snuck into the woods, and like that tenderness. We talked about it, you know, after like that tenderness that, you know, started developing then. Like, it pays off now because Sam could continue to be on like this crazy streak, this schizophrenic streak that he was on after killing all those dudes. But like, there's this immediate connection and tenderness between them, because, man, he's seen her, you know, at her bloodiest after she, you know, had to run through an ear to save him. And she's seeing him also in, you know, bloody activities and stuff. So like in a crazy way, like that's kind of like their bond, you know? And I think he knows that she genuinely cares for him, you know, even through his delusions, even through his schizophrenia. So like I said, like this is where like these relationships start to pay off if they do it right. And they're definitely doing it right with Sam and Emma.
Especially with him saying to her when he realizes that Marie and Emma have no recollection of him and the events the day before, he says, I'm going to find a way to make you remember, to, you know, prove it to you. And it's kind of like, well, prove what? Like that you're a hero, that you're a real hero. And I'm just like, that's so touching. That's so lovely for him to say. And I love that. I love that for the both of them.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, these actors are all super young. They're like early 20s. They're doing a great job on this show. And speaking of Emma, I wanted to mention there was a reference in this episode where, obviously in episode 4, she got big at the very end, which we didn't know she could do that. And, you know, Marie's asking her about it. She's like, did you know you could do that? She's like, yeah, I do. I found out it was the Buster Beaver incident, which was something that happened in season 3. That's where Black Noir would go and like hang out with the kind of cartoon or the animated characters from that universe or whatever. So I like how they tied it back to that. It sounds like she was like at a birthday party and had too much pizza or something, because Buster Beaver is like a Chuck E. Cheese in the, you know, the Vought universe. And she got really big or something. So again, they do a really good job of like callbacks to what we learned in The Boys and kind of reminding us of, hey, remember this? This was cool. And yeah, it's just really well done.
And also by her getting big, she's been trending on social media. She's getting recognized on campus. She broke the 100 rankings, I guess, through Godolkin. She's like number 88 now. So giant cricket apparently is a thing. Not sure how well that's going to play out, but we know one thing for sure. Her mom is probably not a fan of this. But hey, whatever works.
No, but Brittany, you mentioned her rankings. It's like she's 88. Like there's 87 other young soups who are higher regarded than Emma. Like,
yeah,
she has like Ant-Man's powers. Now she doesn't have the Ant-Man suit, the ability that he has to transform. Hers is, you know, a little tougher, but still, like, I mean, you know,
wonder if there's another way that she can get big and small that she just hasn't really tapped into. Because if we would have looked at episode 1 and we found out about her powers, when we found out about her powers in episode 1, I was like, I don't see how this could be like an efficient superhero, right? Because like there's too many things, too many factors that have to go into you tapping into like that power. But like, again, everybody's finding out more about their powers and like their capabilities and what, you know, what they can do. Like, I'm pretty sure there's another way for Emma to like tap into these superhero powers or superpowers without having to eat a lot or without having to purge herself. And this is all about discovery. Like, I want to see in these last 3 episodes, like her discover more about her powers, her get to a different level of comfort with these powers. Because so far, all these powers really, for the most part, have done is cause, you know, a decline in self-esteem, you know, made her feel worse about herself, to say nothing of like the treatment from her mother, the treatment from, you know, men, boys, whatever. So like, I want to see Emma like grow into herself and learn more about these powers, learn how to control them, learn how to tap into them in an alternative way that doesn't also like, you know, harm her in the process.
And I wonder if the same could even be said for Kate, because of the physical toll that it takes on her after she pushes someone to do whatever her bidding may be, right? it seems like if she pushes herself too much, she's going to have an aneurysm or something. So, I mean, that can't be good either.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about this show, to me, Jordan might be the only one that I can think of who it doesn't seem like there's a downside to that character's powers. Right. I mean, obviously the character can switch from male to female and has some kind of like, I don't know, force push power, or like almost like the Ken and Ryu from Street Fighter Hadouken thing or whatever. Like that character can do that, but you don't see like obviously with Kate, she pushes people too much and she gets ill. Obviously with what happens with Emma, she has to, you know, throw up or overeat to get big or small. We see all these characters. Maybe Andre might have. We haven't really seen the downside of his abilities, I don't think. But it seems like there's a trade off with all these characters, except for the two I mentioned. And so maybe that's just this world. Like you don't get to be Superman in this world. You might have the powers, but you know there's a negative to all the positives that you might have.
I mean, I'm kind of reminded about the character Blind Spot. I think his name was Blind Spot when he was quote auditioning for the Seven, and Homelander is like, oh wow, you're really like really really good, you can hear well, mm-hmm. and you can sense things, and then he just like claps his ears and dude's just like bleeding out from his ears. It's like there has to be some limitations to people's abilities, right? Like not everyone is as fortunate quote unquote as Homelander or maybe even Sam. I mean, I don't know what limitations Sam may have.
I think it might just be the mental, like the mental toll of using the powers or whatever they've experimented on him and done to him.
Or if that was just like an underlying mental thing that was already there, and then by being shot up with compound V, it just like enhanced it that much more. Who knows? Magnified. Thank you. Yeah.
You mentioned that the suit.
I was just saying, I think that his powers and the mental drain are like just kind of concurrently happening at the same time. Like to have these powers, you just have to be like really, really, really fucked up in the head.
Yeah. And speaking of that, we got a reference to a character that we lost in it. Season one of The Boys was a Mesmer. There was a show back in the day called The Mesmerizer. And it was a hit show in the 90s. It starred Mesmer, who was played by Haley Joel Osment in season one of The Boys. Of course, Butcher killed him.
God.
In a
glorious fashion.
Bathroom scene. Yeah. What did y'all, I mean, again, I love these callbacks. I love how they're like weaving this world together. Brittany, what'd you think about like, it's like, honestly, I'd forgotten about that character, even though it was a cool character in the moment, season one. Yeah. It's just like I said, that so much happens in this show that the train just keeps rolling. But then whenever they kind of look back and go, remember that? Like they add a little wrinkle to it. I just think it's great.
No, it is. And it makes me wonder too, like, is that all that's available at Godolkin? Is that you only get to watch like the things of other soups? And, you know, obviously everyone knows who Ted Knight was and things of that nature. But at the same time, it kind of would help support about the whole Dave Chappelle reference that Emma spout out. You know, if you're watching stuff from the 90s like that, then you probably would know Chappelle. So yeah. Those little Easter eggs here and there. I mean, there was also, you still see like the vending machines that have A-Train on it. Right. And you'll see other references of other soups from The Boys. So no, I mean, it's all in the same world, and it just makes sense that you're going to see those sort of Easter eggs here and there.
Yeah, it's just really impressive world building.
It really is. It really is. It makes the whole show just so much more fun. Yeah. Now that we have like a cross reference to The Boys.
Are there any other Easter eggs, Tristan, you want to point out, or anything you want to talk about with the, as far as Mesmer, or the fact that like it looked like his show, like the title sequence, like it kind of looked like Law and Order, the way Mesmer was. I don't know. That was
cool. Yeah, that's how it was even in season one of The Boys.
Okay.
Yeah. I only know that because I'd watched it. I watch Law and Order all the time.
No, you just have to like pay really close attention because like a lot of those references will just pop up in like these common conversations that they're having. And for the thing for me is like sometimes with the names, I don't know if they're making like a, you know, a real life reference like Tyrone Biggums or a Boys universe. And like one thing about this universe is they kind of weave both of them at the same time as if like these superheroes are real. Like this is something that's real life and like right. everybody's just expected to get, you know, easily. So,
I mean, they absolutely do blend in real life stuff because Sam's favorite movie is Waterworld.
Right.
And that's a terrible movie. So yeah.
Well, I haven't seen it.
Yeah. You're not missing out on much.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely fun to watch the show and, you know, understand these references, not only from real world, but also from like the Boys itself, right? And we're also going to be visited next episode by Soldier Boy, played by the lovely Jensen Ackles. I'm a huge fan of now, so yeah, I'm excited to see just what is going to happen in the next episode, because it seems like there's a lot of moving parts, and I mean that quite literally. There's like an archway like made of stone that looks like it's moving, it's bricks. I don't know who's controlling that. I'm fascinated to find out what is going to happen with the whole gang and then like with Kate, because she's been exposed. She's revealed her true hand, if you will. So, and it seems like she's in trouble somehow. And I think Andre has to convince Marie to like try to help her, help Kate. So I don't know. That's going to be interesting to see.
I want to know who Marie's benefactor is. So I guess that's something I'm really looking forward to seeing. 100%. And then obviously, like, what is the school or what does Dean Shetty have over Kate and Rufus? Like, all these people. Like, how deep do these machinations go for Dean Shetty? Tech Knight, like, I don't think he's going away. So, like, how is that going to play out as well? So
they got to bring him back.
I think he's absolutely coming back.
Yeah, he was great. I absolutely enjoyed his appearance. And also, you know, whatever Cordova is working on with this virus to control the soups, is it going to be something like, I'm going to relate it to that of the book series Divergent, where everyone's, maybe that's that tracking device thing where, you know, once it's turned on, then everyone becomes like a robot and submissive to the will of somebody,
like remote Kate? Control soups.
Yeah, basically. I don't know. I'm really curious to find out why they're doing this sort of experiment and how it's going to be used.
Well, and they already have so much control over these soups anyway, these people with power. So to me, I think it must be like just a total, like, you know, like you're a zombie for VOD or something. That must be what they're working on. I did notice that part where Cardoza's talking to Shetty about it, and she references like that basically his job is to cut up soups and see what makes them tick.
Not something you can put on your LinkedIn profile.
Right, that's what she said. But I mean, like, I think that's a literal description of what he does. So that's pretty bizarre that's that guy's job.
More or less bizarre than the soup at the party who had like these hand vibrations and did whatever he did to that girl. Ugh. That was disturbing. Yeah,
I was still trying to figure that out exactly.
I mean,
like her midsection and like the,
like, did she orgasm out that way? Because that's what it kind of seemed like. And it was seeping through the floor and through the ceiling. Ugh, gross. I'm okay.
Or the guy who's like, you know, fucking animal, like,
yeah, the invisible RA who's
the llama is very upset with him. Why?
Goodness. I'm glad you said llama, because I was like, I know it's not a camel, but it's close to a camel. Whatever that.
Now, if you said alpaca, I could have forgiven you, but it's a llama. Yeah, don't ask me how I know. I just know.
That'll be another episode. Yeah. So The last thing I wanted to point out was this episode, if you take out the credits, it's only like 35 minutes. This is a very short episode, but you never know it from watching. There's so much stuff that's packed into that time. It moves so fast and the references are quick. And it's just like this. I mean, this is a show that I have to watch a couple times just to kind of, you know, get everything. Yeah. But for 35 minutes, man, they really know what they're doing. They're putting a lot of information, a lot of storylines out there. And we only have three more to go.
One quick thing I wanted to bring up to y'all, and maybe we can just end it on this, is that the girl who like exposed Emma about her purging, right? The bitchy one.
Yep.
Still don't know what her superpowers are yet. We know she was at that party because we see her in the TikTok or the reel or whatever the case was. Yeah. I wonder if maybe she also has a hand in any of the shenanigans that's going on at Godolkin. Because, like I said, we hardly know anything about her. I mean, not to say like she's going to have a bigger role than what she currently has, but I just wonder if she too also has a hand in it. And then too, with Rufus, I mean, you're made to believe that Rufus has a hand in it. And then he's kind of like, I just work in the dean's office. I don't know anything about anything, but you know, misdirection is obviously a thing when it comes down to these shows. So I'm just curious. I don't know. I'm just curious.
Yeah. Well, Tristan, any final thoughts on the episode?
No, not really. Like, I guess, yeah, I it's kind of curious that old girl wasn't in this episode, but this was more, I guess another reason it was like so short, it was really kind of compact and kind of like really focusing on like the main soup characters and Dean Shetty. But, you know, a lot of our characters on the peripheral, her being one of them, love to know more. You know, like I said, what's the power? Like, how does she play into all this? So I don't know where this is going. I don't know where this is going to end. Like, I don't even have a theory. Like, this is one of the few shows where like I don't even have a theory on it. So I'm just looking forward to Thursday night, Friday, whatever.
We're just here for the ride, and it's one hell of a ride. That's for damn sure. I also want to see how Polarity, as a trustee to Godolkin, is going to play into all this too, because he seemed freaking scared when Andre brought up the woods. Mm. So people gonna die. That's for damn sure.
People gonna die.
The thing is with this show is just like The Boys, like we won't have to wait long for them to answer the questions, because a lot of the things are probably going to be answered in the next episode, and they're going to create more questions to keep answering for their final two episodes. So
yeah,
there's a lot. I mean, there's only three episodes left, but there's a lot in those episodes, I'm sure, that we'll have to talk about. So so now you know what we think about this episode. We want to know what you think about this episode. Brittany, how can people let us know?
Join us for our live streams right here on YouTube. And if you can't join us for our live stream, come back to YouTube, watch the replay. Let us know your thoughts in the comment section down below. And also don't forget to subscribe, hit that like button, and hit that notification bell. That way you can know the next time we will be going live. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter/X, Instagram, and Threads at Watchers Basement. Give us a follow on all of those platforms and use that same hashtag, Watchers Basement, to help grow our audience. And if you're not into video podcasts, we've got you covered with audio podcasts that are available on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Follow us all over there. Give us a 5-star rating. It would really help us out.
Yes, it would. So thank you, Brittany. So for Brittany, for Tristan, I'm Justin saying thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Enjoy the rest of your day.